Chazorshu Mesachas Demai Perek Vav Mishnah Beis Mitzvah Mesachas Klein Perek Aleph Mishnah Aleph. The focus of the sixth Perek of Mesachas Demai was when there are two people who are involved in a particular produce, perhaps two different owners, and the focus of the Perek was who is obligated to tithe the produce. And a lot of this Perek is not just specific to Demai, but would apply to Tevel as well. Because the question is not whether to tithe or how to tithe, rather the question is who is obligated to tithe the produce. And the first half of the Perek discussed an oris and a choicher. An oris is somebody who rents and works a field, and he pays a percentage of the annual crop to the owner. Whereas a choicher is somebody who rents and works the field, but instead of paying a percentage to the owner, he pays a fixed amount of crop to the owner. And we've already discussed in the first Mishnah somebody who is an oris and a choicher of a Jew. And we said that the basic rule is that in that case, the oris does not need to tithe the produce which he gives to the owner. He only needs to tithe the produce which he keeps for himself. And this is to encourage people to work the land in Eretz Yisrael. Now there are seven cases altogether in the Perek discussing different scenarios of an oris and a choicher. And two of them were in the first Mishnah. Now we're up to number three. And that is a choicher of a non-Jew. So this is a Jew who is working and renting a field from a non-Jew, and he pays a fixed amount to the non-Jew. So this is a good deal for the non-Jewish owner, because he's guaranteed to get a specific amount of crop. Even if, let's say, it's a bad year that year, and not a lot of crop grow, the amount that he'll get is not dependent on how much grows, because it's not a percentage of the crop, it's a fixed amount. And halacha is that the choicher needs to tithe everything which he gives to the non-Jew. Obviously his own produce, this just means that he has to tithe everything. And the reason for this is to discourage him from working a non-Jew's land in Eretz Yisrael, so that the non-Jew won't be able to find workers who want to work for him, and the non-Jew will end up selling it, hopefully to a Jew. Now this doesn't apply to an oris of a non-Jew, because an oris is not being that helpful to the non-Jew, because the non-Jew is not guaranteed to get a lot of crop. If it's a bad harvest that year, then he gets a percentage of it, which won't be so much. And therefore we're not so concerned about discouraging arisim of a non-Jew. However, Rabbi Yehuda says that if this particular oris is working in a field which was stolen by the non-Jews from the oris's ancestors, so that means that the oris has a connection to the land, and he'll want to buy it. So in that scenario, we make him tithe all of the crop, so that it will be very expensive for him, and he won't want to continue the arrangement, but he won't want to leave the field altogether, so he'll end up buying it, and the land of Eretz Yisrael will go back to Jews. Mishnah Gimel, a Kohen or a Levi who is an oris of a Yisrael owner. So according to the Tanakhama, the Chachomim, the Kohen or Levi don't get all of the trimus or all of the maaseros. They didn't perform any act of acquisition, so they split that normally just like the rest of the crop. However, according to Eliezer, it's an understood part of the agreement that they'll receive all of the trimus and maaseros from that crop, and they're not concerned that no act of acquisition was taking place. Mishnah Dalad, now we had the other way around, if Yisrael is an oris of a Kohen or a Levi, so in that scenario everybody agrees that he needs to give all of the trimus to the owner. Because here it is an understood part of the agreement that the owner didn't want to relinquish this right of the trimus and maaseros. Meaning, had he not got this worker, so he would have worked the field himself, and a Kohen or Levi can keep the trimus from their own field. So now they got the worker, we don't assume that they're now giving away their trimus as well. Rather, it's understood that they want to keep all of the trimus for themselves, and it's only the rest of the crop which they're going to split. Now Rabbi Shmuel takes this a step further, and he says that somebody who does not live in Yerushalayim, who is an oris of somebody who does live in Yerushalayim, he needs to give all of his maaser sheni to the owner who lives in Yerushalayim. Because since the owner lives in Yerushalayim, it's much easier for him to eat maaser sheni, because maaser sheni has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. So again, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's an understood part of the agreement that the owner wanted to keep all of the maaser sheni for himself. However, according to the Chachomim, maaser sheni is not the same as trimus and maaseros. Because maaser sheni, the guy who doesn't live in Yerushalayim, can just bring it up to Yerushalayim and then eat it there. And therefore you split it in the regular manner, and the worker does not need to give all of the maaser sheni to the owner. Mishnah Hey, when it comes to trees, and the example the Mishnah gave was olive trees, but it would apply to most trees anyway. Because trees are so significant and valuable, even in a case where a Kohen or a Levi is an oris for a Yisrael, or a Yisrael is an oris for a Kohen or Levi, they are split in the regular manner. And we don't just give all of the trimus or maaseros to the Levi, or the Kohen, because since they're so significant, we assume that neither party is willing to forego their right to those trees. It's understood that they both want to keep the trees. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda, trees are no different to other crop, therefore the halachos of the previous two Mishnayos would apply. Rabbi Yehuda adds that if a Yisrael is an oris of a Kohen or a Levi, but not a regular oris, because the deal they have is that he's only going to harvest the olives, he's not necessarily going to work the whole field from the beginning, he's going to just harvest the olives, turn them into oil, sell the oil, and out of the profit which he makes from selling the oil, he'll get a percentage of the profit. Now that means that this oris has nothing to do with the produce itself, only the profit, which means that he has no right over the trimus and maaseros, because that applies to the produce, not the profit. So in that case, all of the trimus and maaseros would go to the owner, who is a Kohen or a Levi. Mishnah Vov, since we're discussing olives, according to Beis Shammai, one is not allowed to sell olives to a non-chover, somebody who isn't particular about tumah and tahara, staying pure, because once the olives have been softened in a vat, which is part of the processing of the olives, so they're able to become tomei from that point onwards, which means that if the non-chover touches them, they immediately become tomei, because the non-chover is assumed to be tomei. So therefore you can't sell him the olives because you're indirectly causing them to become tomei. However, according to Beis Hillel, you can, as long as he separates Maisis, of course, but there's no problem about Tumah and Tahara, because technically, the one who's buying the olives doesn't have to soften them in a vat. He might decide to eat them before softening them. And before they've been softened in a vat, they can't become Tomei yet. So even though this is slightly unlikely, since it's possible, you are allowed to sell it to a non-chover. However, the Mishnah does note that the pious people of Beis Hillel did follow Beis Shammai's stricter opinion in this regard. Mishnah Zayin, the last few Mishnahs of the Perek no longer talk about renting a field, or an Oris or a Chaycher, but it's still talking about who is obligated to tithe the produce. Now if two people jointly own vineyards, they harvest their wine and their grapes into one wine vat. So they process all the wine together, and then at the end, they split the wine again, and one of them takes half of it, the other guy takes the other half. However, one of the two people, is an Am Haaretz. The halacha is that the ne'emon, the non-Am Haaretz, who is trusted with regards to Maiseris, he needs to tithe his own wine, obviously. So his half he needs to tithe, but he also needs to tithe half of the other person's wine. So altogether here, he's tithing 3/4 of the entire wine. And the reason for this is because we say ein breira, which in this context means that we do not consider each partner's half to have always belonged to that partner. Rather, only from now it belongs to that partner. Until now, every unit was half owned by Reuven, half owned by Shimon. Which means that now that you're splitting it into two halves, each half contains half of the other partner's half. So really, the Ne'emon is in a way giving half of the Am Haaretz's half to the Am Haaretz, because half of it belonged to him. So he's really giving him that half, and therefore half of the Am Haaretz's half, the Ne'emon needs to tithe so that he does not cause the Am Haaretz to eat untithed produce. Mishnah Ches, in the following case, we did use Breira, and that case is where two people receive a field together, either as an inheritance or as an arisus. If they were both arisim of a field, or they were just partners, they bought it together. The point is, though, they did not prolong their partnership, like in the previous case. In the previous case, the two people clearly wanted to be partners until the end. They processed all their wine together, but in a case where, let's say, two people inherit a field together, but they don't actually do any of the harvesting and processing together yet, so they haven't shown that they want to be partners, in which case we can use Breira. Here we would say Yesh Breira. We do consider each partner's half to have belonged to him all along, because their partnership was never as strong, really. And therefore, if one of the partners is a Ne'emon and one of them is an Am Haaretz, then Ne'emon does not need to tithe any of the other partner's half. He'll only need to tithe his own half. But the condition of this is that each different produce is split in half. It can't be that the Ne'emon takes all of the wheat and the other guy takes all of the barley, let's say, because they are still partners in the wheat, and then independently of that, they're partners in the barley. All right, Mishnah Test, the same applies to two brothers, one's a Chover, one's an Am Haaretz, and they inherit land and property from their father, who is also an Am Haaretz. So again, the Chover does not need to tithe whatever inheritance goes to the Am Haaretz. And we also said here that something which can become Tomei is considered like a different type of produce to the other thing, meaning that he can't say, oh, you take all of the produce which can become Tomei, and I'll take the other produce. We view them as different types of produce, which means that they are partners in that and partners in that. So they need to split each one in half. Mishnah Yud, if a convert's father dies, now halachically the convert is not really related to his father, because when he converted, he became like a newborn person. And because of that, the ownership of his father's property, when his father dies, does not immediately become the son's, which means that he can allow his non-Jewish brother to take all of the Avodah Zorah, all of the idolatrous property, and then he'll take the other property. It's not considered like exchanging Avodah Zorah or benefiting from Avodah Zorah, because it was never his. However, if it did become his, if let's say he took something which was Avodah Zorah, so he cannot now exchange that for something else with his brother. Because again, you cannot benefit from Avodah Zorah. Mishnah Yud Aleph, if somebody buys produce from an Am Haaretz in Syria, Syria is the land which was conquered by David HaMelech before the rest of the Eretz Yisrael proper was conquered. So since most produce which was sold there is grown either totally outside of Eretz Yisrael, or even if it was grown in Syria, it was grown by non-Jews, and therefore you do not need to tithe that produce, the decree of Demai would not apply there. And then the Mishnah discussed an important rule, and that is if the seller tells him, and the seller is assumed to be an Am Haaretz, if he tells him that it grew in Eretz Yisrael, and that he was the one who grew it, and he's a Jew. So in that case, obviously the buyer does need to tithe it, because now it becomes like regular demai produce. However, if the seller then adds that he did actually tithe it, so in this case he is believed, even though in general we don't believe in Am Haaretz with regards to tithes, in this case we do, because HaPesha Osar Hu HaPesha Heter. If somebody makes a statement that obligates him in something or forbids something, and then immediately after that, he makes a statement which then permits that thing or exempts it, he's believed. So since he was the one who obligated it in the first place, so we believe him to exempt them from tithes. However, if the buyer does know as a fact that the seller has a field in Surya, then he needs to assume that he was the one who grew it, which means that it would be obligated in Trumas and Maaseiros. Mishnah Yud Beis, if a chover buys a loaf of bread for himself and another loaf of bread for the sake of an Am Haaretz, so the one which he gives the Am Haaretz, he does not need to tithe. Even though usually you cannot give untithed produce to an Am Haaretz, in this case he does not need to tithe it. And the reason for this is because, again, Breira. Because of Breira, we consider the loaf to have always belonged to the Am Haaretz. He buys two loaves, he doesn't designate either one for a specific person. So whichever one goes to the Am Haaretz, we assume to have always belonged to the Am Haaretz as soon as the guy bought it. And that the chover is just passing it on from the seller to the Am Haaretz buyer. However, if the seller did designate one loaf for him and one loaf for the Am Haaretz, so then obviously you can't use Breira anymore. Which means that if the two loaves get mixed together, he does need to tithe the one which he gives to the Am Haaretz, in case that is the one which he actually designated for himself, which means that he is now giving that to the Am Haaretz. It's not as if it always belonged to the Am Haaretz, because really it was his. He designated it for himself. So in that scenario, he would need to tithe it before giving it to the Am Haaretz. The final perek, the seventh perek of Demai, brought quite a few unusual ways of tithing. Not really the standard procedure. And the first of those is if somebody was invited to eat at an Am Haaretz's house for Shabbos, and of course on Shabbos you can't tithe produce, so he can designate the tithes before Shabbos, in the way that he generally takes tithes. So you designate that by speech, in the same way as you generally tithe Demai. And then when you're about to eat it the next day on Shabbos, you repeat the designation and separate the tithes just before eating it on Shabbos. And you can do that because the designation was originally done before Shabbos. Mishnah Beis, when somebody tithes Demai, which is a liquid, and this would apply to the previous case and really any case of tithing Demai. If you tithe a Demai drink, such as a cup of wine, that was the example which the Mishnah gave. So instead of the normal way you do it is to mark off a specific part of it, but with wine it's a liquid, so it's all mixed together. You can't mark off a specific part, so what should you do? You should designate the last 10% of the wine in the cup. You won't drink that last 10%. You should designate that as Maaser Rishon, and then the 1% is Trumas Maaser in the way that he normally does it. And again, this works via Breira, because at the moment you're not sure which wine is going to be left in the cup last. But retroactively, once it is, we consider it to be that wine which was designated from the beginning as Trumas Maaser and Maaser Rishon. And whereas usually when you designate Maaser Sheni, you do it in the north part or the south part, you pick a specific direction. In this case, again, you can't really do the sides of the wine, the sides of the cup, and therefore you should say that the top 10%, the upper 10% of the wine, you should designate that as Maaser Sheni and then redeem it onto money, and then you can drink that. Mishnah Gimel. This Mishnah discussed a worker who is working for an Am Haaretz, and the Am Haaretz who is employing him provides him with 100 dried figs per day. That's the deal they've got, that's the meals which he provides for him. So we had a three-year machlokes as to what the Am Haaretz should do. According to the Chachomim, the Tanna Kamma, he should tithe Demai as usual, and then the 1% which will be Trumas Maaser, he should give that to the Kohen, and he should eat the rest of the 99. Of course, redeem the Maaser Sheni onto other things, and then he can eat the rest of the figs. So he'll eat that way 99 out of the 100 figs. However, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he has to eat all 100 figs. Because that's the deal he's got with the employer, and the employer expects him to have that amount of energy from the food to work. And therefore, if he only eats 99 figs, he's in a way cheating the owner. So he has to eat all 100 figs, and therefore he needs to get another fig from somewhere else and give that to the Kohen, and that way he'll still eat 100 figs. Now, according to Rabbi Yossi, he also eats 100 figs, but the reason for this is because to give one of the figs to the Kohen won't help. Because the Chachom instituted that Trumas Maaser has to come from the employer himself, the owner. So it won't help for the worker to give the Trumas Maaser to the Kohen. It has to come from the employer, and therefore the employer should give him an extra fig so that he can both give it to the Kohen from the employer, as well as being able to have 100 figs for himself. Mishnah Dalet. So we saw in the first Mishnah of the Perek that when it comes to Demai, if you need to tithe it before Shabbos so that you can eat it on Shabbos but you don't have the produce with you, then as long as you designate it before Shabbos and then designate it again and separate it on Shabbos, that's okay. Now when it comes to Tevel, there's also a way to do it, but slightly differently. The Mishnah's exact case was where you buy produce from a kusi, and the kusim were the nation who converted, sort of half converted. It was an uncertain conversion, and they were not so particular with the laws of tithes, and that which they sold to others, they didn't tithe. So their produce is considered tevel. So if somebody has produce which he bought from a kusi, and he didn't manage to tithe it until Shabbos, and it's now Ben HaShemoshes of Shabbos, it's twilight, he can still designate the tithes at that time during Ben HaShemoshes of Shabbos, and then he can eat it on Shabbos. But whereas with Demai, he separates it on Shabbos, when it comes to Tevel, he only separates it on Motzei Shabbos. And via the mechanism of Breira, we consider whatever he separates on Motzei Shabbos to have always been the Trumas and Maisras from the beginning. So when he ate it on Shabbos, he wasn't eating Tevel, because since he designated it before Shabbos, so even though he only separated it after Shabbos, we consider it to have retroactively always been tithed, which once again works via Breira. And then Mishnah Hay just brought out the difference between Demai and Tevel, and again, that is that Demai, you can separate it on Shabbos itself, but Tevel, you have to do the actual separating after Shabbos, but it still works retroactively. Mishnah Vov, somebody has two baskets, basket 1 and basket 2, and he declares that the tithes of the produce in basket 1 are to be found in basket 2, meaning he's trying to say that he's separating tithes from basket 2 on behalf of basket 1. So that works. Now, if he says that the tithes of basket 1 should be in basket 2, and the tithes of basket 2 should be in basket 1, then only the first half works. Only the produce in basket 1 was considered tithed, since once that's tithed, it can no longer be used to tithe something else, because you can only tithe something on behalf of something else if they are both obligated in tithes. So as soon as one has already been tithed, it can't be used to tithe other produce. But if he declares that the tithes of a particular basket, of one of the baskets, should be found in the other basket, he doesn't specify which one. So we interpret what he means as that he wants to designate the tithes from one of the baskets on behalf of both. So he can choose which one, and he can separate tithes from there on behalf of that basket, plus the other basket as well. Alright, Mishnah Zion, extremely complicated Mishnah, not so clear what's going on, but let's try and summarize as much as we can. If 100 units of Tevel gets mixed up with 100 units of Chulin, the halacha is the owner needs to give 101 units to the Kohen, and then the Kohen pays him for all of it except for the one unit of Trumas Maaser, which he actually owes him. That's the halacha. Now the reason for this, in short, is as follows. We need to take into account the halachic reality, the status of the produce, plus how we view it. So halachically, each unit which you take out is half Tevel, half Chulin. However, he needs to take 100 out. Why? Because if he takes 100 out, then we can view that 100 as being the 100 Tevel. There was a collection before of 100 Tevel which fell into this. So if he picks out 100, then we can now view that whole 100 as totally Tevel. So if that 100 is totally Tevel, then 10 units of that become Maaser Rishon, and 1 unit of the 10 becomes Trumas Maaser. Now if that 100 is viewed as totally Tevel, then the other 100 is viewed as totally Chulin. Now there's no Trumas Maaser in Chulin, however it's only viewed as Chulin. Halachically it's half Tevel. So since halachically that second lot of 100 is half Tevel, and also the one unit of Trumas Maaser which we separated from the first 100, we only view that as totally Tevel, which means that the 1% is totally Trumas Maaser, but halachically it's only half Trumas Maaser, so you've only really separated half a unit of Trumas Maaser halachically, which means you need to separate another half, so you separate one from the second lot of 100, half of which is Trumas Maaser, so altogether you've got half plus a half, which makes one unit of Trumas Maaser. Next case, if you've got 100 units of Tevel mixed up with 100 units of Maaser Rishon, so again you need to give 101 units to the Kohen, except that this time the Kohen doesn't need to pay for 11 of the units, because the 100 units of Maaser Rishon require 10 Trumas Maaser to be taken, plus 1% of the Tevel, so that makes 11 altogether. And the reason for this is the same as the previous case, except that here we're not concerned, even though we view the second 100 as the Maaser Rishon 100, we don't require that all 10 of the Trumas Maaser, which come from the Maaser Rishon, have to come from the second lot of 100. It's okay if they also come from the first 100, so therefore as long as you just take one from the second lot of 100, that's okay, because in total you'll have 11 units of Trumas Maaser, which is actually 22, but halachically it's only 11 Trumas Maaser. And again, you give 101 to the Kohen. Now, if 100 units of Chulin gets mixed up with 100 units of Maaser Rishon, so here you need to give 110 units to the Kohen. And the way we understood this is because we view the first 100 as well as the second 100 as totally Maaser Rishon. In this case, we do require that the 10 units of Trumas Maaser which need to come from the Maaser Rishon come from the second 100. Here we're more concerned about how we view it. So we view the second 100 as Maaser Rishon, and therefore 10 of those need to be taken as Trumas Maaser. Alright, and finally, if 100 units of Tevel gets mixed up with 90 units of Mycerition, and a similar idea would apply if it was 90 and 80, but we'll go with the example of 100 of Tevel and 90 of Mycerition. So you can give just 10 units of Trumus Mycer, and that's it. One of them will be for the Tevel and 9 for the Mycerition. And the reason why you don't have to give any extra is because the extra Tevel here, remember there's 10 extra units of Tevel here, we view that as another separate lot of produce. So it's like you've got 90 units of Tevel, 90 units of Mycerition, and a separate lot of 10 units of definite Tevel. Now in that scenario, you can just separate that extra, the extra bit, the separate bit, on behalf of the mixture. So in this case, it's a perfect amount. There are 10 extra units, and that's exactly how much Trumus Mycer has to be separated from this mixture. Mishnah Ches, if somebody has 10 rows of 10 barrels each, and he declares that one of the barrels in a specific outer row should be Mycerition. He didn't specify which of the barrels in the outer row, but he specified which outer row, but he's not sure which one. He can't remember which one he specified. So he should designate two barrels in two opposite corners, and that way he would have covered all four outer rows, because each corner covers two rows. Number two, if he declared one of the barrels in half of a specific outer row, and again, he's not sure which one, so he should designate all four of the corner barrels. That way he'll cover each half outer row. If he declared one of the barrels in a row, not specifically an outer row, so he should take one barrel in a diagonal row from one corner to the other. So that way he'll have a barrel in every single row, so he'll cover whatever he did, whatever he designated. And if he declared half of a specific row, so he should designate all the barrels in both diagonal rows from one corner to another, and that way he'll cover each half row. The first mission of Kelaim listed lots of different produce and said whether they're Kelaim or not. So firstly we said that wheat and inferior wheat are still considered the same type, and therefore you would be able to plant them in the same field. And then we listed a few other things which are also similar, and therefore you can plant together. And the two things which we take into account is number one, the appearance and the shape of the plant, and the produce, and number two, the taste.